This is The View from Tab, episode 61. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm Ari Parker.
And that's the two of us, because nobody else is with us tonight for one reason or another. We've been trying to get people together, but it has been difficult. We've had hurricanes and lightning and snowstorms and nor'easters and one thing after the other. But we still need to talk about stuff. And the reason I wanted Ari to be with us, or with me, since it's only me, is I want to talk about something very, very specific, and that we're going to be doing at a tournament at the school that Ari works at. And that thing is called Academy Debate. And Ari, before we started recording, said, people really want to do this? I was just, yeah. I think that, I think people do. So let me explain what it is. I've written up a lot of stuff. I've posted it on my blog. I've sent it out. I actually created a group called the Northeast Forensics Group. And I invited everybody
like
I could
on Facebook.
Yeah, I've invited everybody I could get an address for. And if you want to be a member of the, if you're actually in the Northeast, which as far as I'm concerned extends from here to Chicago and to Florida, just feel free to find it. It's a Google group, very easy to get into.
This is not Northeast Forensics Judges.
No, there is. We do have a group on Facebook, which is just for judges. And, yeah, we do hiring through there and stuff like that, which is pretty good, a little judge exchange. It's a good way to keep this. Now, this is, I mean, I had sent out a thing locally to the Metro Hudson League and to the New York State Debate Coaches Association. And Palmer complained that, well, that's really all well and good if you happen to live in New York, but there's other people, too. And he was right. And I don't, you know, we don't have a way to communicate as a group among ourselves. I mean, so I just created the thing. I mean, we haven't actually communicated much except that I sent out, you know, my explanation of what Academy Debate is.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, it's there.
Your website actually has a lot of good material, yeah. I found. I use your judge manual both PF and LD, and I suggest people check it out.
Yeah, well, I use that.
It's jimmenick.com.
Yeah, I put all that stuff out there. And I try to keep it a little updated. I just updated the LD stuff. I'd been reading the LD stuff, which I wrote a million years ago, and I realized, holy God, this stuff is, like, so outdated. I mean, some of this stuff is, if I'm teaching you how to judge in a manual, that means you're a parent, you know. So I'm writing this thing for parents.
You got to include your speaker points in the new version of it.
I probably don't. I have that as a separate thing. And the speaker points is important, getting everybody on the same page with those. I've been sending them out just to people as part of the, I'll do that. I'll make a note of that. But I've been sending it out to people as just part of the various tournaments we go to. Anyhow, we have this thing. We have a way to communicate. We don't necessarily use it. I mean, if you have, we haven't talked about this stuff too much, but I'm not a member, and my school is not a member of the NFL. And I don't consider the NFL like one of the great ways of communicating amongst ourselves. But nonetheless, you know, we do have concerns, and the Northeast tends to go to the Northeast tournaments. I mean, the Northeast is a really big debate area, you know, and we have like a bunch of schools in Massachusetts and a lot of public forum schools up there. You know, not a lot of policy, not a lot of Lincoln Douglas. We have, I mean, Lexington, obviously, plus some others. You know, so there is a serious contingent, but the real contingent up there is public forum. And part of our problem, I think, as a region is getting those folks to leave town and come down because they're really good, and to come, you know, come to New York or, you know, come to some other tournaments.
Right.
You know, get those people on board, too. Part of the problem being that their public forum is an outgrowth of their speech more likely.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, rather than an outgrowth of LD. And so, you know, they're looking for speech stuff. So they'll all show up at Columbia or something like that.
But they won't, huge PF tournament.
Yeah, but they won't show up at Hen Hud or something like that because, you know, they can't mobilize the whole team. So there's a lot of, you know, trying to appeal to them, you know, get a little mind shift or at least tell them what's going on. But anyhow, let me explain. Here's the whole thing about Academy Debate. And this goes back to some things, some problems I've had and a lot of discussions I've had with other people as well. But I think it's objectively true. What we have now is, it's very easy if you are a novice in In anything. I mean, we're starting to get novice divisions in public forum, just like, you know, we have novice divisions in policy, and we certainly have novice divisions in LD, and we have them regularly. You know, we have no dearth of opportunities at colleges, at high schools, local regional events, whatever it is. If you are a novice, you can debate all the time. This is not a problem. So we have opportunities for people to start out. And then we have the most tangential junior varsity concept around here. You know, we have some junior varsity opportunities. We have them at local tournaments. I mean, certainly Yale starts off with a junior varsity.
Yale's the only tournament I can remember that's at JV.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, there used to be more of them did. And
Glenbrook says JV,
you know,
but
yeah,
that's not.
Yeah, but around here, I mean, it used to be, I mean, Princeton used to have a JV division. Monticello used to have a JV division. A lot of places had JV divisions. But just the way things are working, what was happening was it just wasn't working out the way it was set up at the time. So the JV divisions just sort of disappeared, and I'm sort of to blame for that because I took it out of the colleges. I recommended that
was
they take
it out.
Was it just
too much? Or?
It was just that what was happening was most of the time, the JV divisions comprise both second year, well, actually, it would, like, let's say Princeton was a good example. So you would go to Princeton, and it would take place in December. So you go to Princeton, and it would be, you know, sophomores and juniors who consider themselves JV. You know, because most places, a JV would be like a sophomore. But some schools would be like, you know, especially a big program might say, well, no, I'm going to make juniors JV, too, because they're not really varsity. And what would happen, though, by then you'd have some novices who had been debating pretty solidly, and they would go in and debate in the JV division, especially in New York where you have this, like, state qualification thing. So once you had your quals, yeah, you might as well just go and debate at the next level.
Right.
And so we did this kind of stuff. This is back in the day, and we were just talking about one of my friends has just come back, one of the students I used to have, John Oliveri, who just came back into the activity and started judging recently. Mm-hmm. But he's a really good example because he won Princeton when he was the JV division when he was a freshman.
Oh, okay. So
because, you know, if you were good, you could beat the people who were still doing JV, if you know what I mean. So that was one of the reasons JV sort of disappeared. Because it was taken, you know.
It just became a way for elite novices.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Rack up wins.
You know, and you know, if in fact you were like you're almost, it was sort of like you, if you were still a JVer and you were a sophomore, parents had thought a junior was sort of dumbed down Lincoln Douglas, and but these other people were hot and they were moving along and you were just in their way, you know. So the train was like boom, and they're coming along. Anyhow, okay, so we have opportunities for novices, and then we have varsity divisions. But what happens is, I mean, from my experience lately, especially, and one of the reasons why I'm moving my team over and I'm starting them out in Lincoln Douglas and moving them to public forum by the end of their freshman year, beginning of their sophomore year, is the nature of Lincoln Douglas nowadays is such that to be a really good Lincoln Douglas debater requires an incredible amount of work, incredible mm-hmm. amount of dedication, and a lot of specialization. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't want you to get the idea that I'm against any of that stuff. It is
right.
What it is. The problem is that, yeah, there's a bunch of kids that really like that. But I think there's an awful lot of kids also that we lose.
That don't go to camp and feel like they have to switch to PI.
Right. If they like Lincoln Douglas. They like, you know, the basic tenets. What we teach people as novices, you know, I'm teaching people about rights and about social contract and justice and morality and all this really elementary ethical morality, philosophical stuff that's really new to these kids. And they really like this kind of stuff. They like talking about it and playing with it. And then it just goes away from there. And that's just the way LD is. It goes away from there. And then there's nothing for them to do. And if they don't want to switch to public forum, they're out of forensics. They're gone. You know, they're absolutely gone. And, you know, we see this all the time. Now, a lot of it is just natural. Kids in high school take up an activity, do it for a year or two, and then move on. That's fine. I'm not talking about that. But the way Lincoln Douglas is built now, it's going to knock them out.
Right.
It's just
a four-year commitment.
You know, if you don't do it the way it's done, yeah. If you're like a lightweight, I hate to use the expression, but if you're like a, let's call it just a light debater, and you're a sophomore, and you go into a preset round, and you go up against some kid who already has like a couple of TOC bids, not only do you lose, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but they're talking so fast about stuff about which you have no idea, and you just sort of, you might as well not have shown up. It's not a learning experience. It's just, there's nothing there.
Right.
So anyhow, so part of my issue is I want to do something for, let's just say sophomores, but also juniors as well, because there are, you know, lightly debated juniors. I mean, this year especially, because we've had so many things that have been canceled and this, that, and the other.
So is this for sophomores or juniors? Is it just sophomores?
I want it to be for sophomores and juniors. So I wanted to have something that sophomores and juniors could do that would be for sophomores and juniors alone. Mm-hmm. Nobody else, because as soon as you start throwing seniors in there, a couple of things happen. Let's make an assumption that the seniors want to go to that tournament. Okay, if the seniors want to go to that tournament, the seniors will win that tournament. The sophomores will get nothing out of the tournament. The juniors will wonder why I'm still doing this, and the seniors will win it. But the thing is, I've seen this here. I've seen this in Monticello. I certainly know this at Byram Hills, which is your school. Mm-hmm. That people, and it used to be like this at Ridge also before Ridge got a bid. And it was,
well, this is the first time I've worked with the Byram Hills tournament.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the thing is,
go ahead.
If a school doesn't have a bid, most seniors really don't want to go.
Right.
You know, if in fact they're still in LD, they're probably in the hunt for bids. Not that they're all going to get the bids.
It's very TOC centric.
Yeah, I mean that's seniors and a lot of juniors as well. Very TOC based, and that's fine, and that's what they're going to do. So they just say, okay, I could go to a tournament. Yeah, I can only go to so many tournaments. Am I going to waste my energy? Like, if I go to a tournament like Byram Hills, let's say. So Byram Hills is the week before Lexington. Is Byram Hills going to be good for me preparing for Lexington? And the answer is no. Because there's not going to be any other debate at your level, or very little debate at your level.
If you're going to Lexington in novice or for its MHL, then it'll be very good preparation.
Oh, yeah, no. The novice is a different thing. If you're going for novice, you have a novice.
But, right, it won't be any.
Yeah. Now, this is just at the varsity level. I mean, this is just for non-novices. Now, novices are covered. I don't worry about novices. So, anyhow, you can't get the seniors to come. This has really been the case at Monticello. I mean, Monticello, which is our first tournament of the year after Yale, so it's the very beginning of October. It used to be a semis bid, then it became a finals bid. And for various reasons, it was never like the hottest tournament in the universe, but it was pretty good, you know. And then it just fell out of favor. I'm not quite sure why. I mean, maybe because they've gone through a couple of coaches now. Rose Joyce is still there, but she really doesn't run the program. It's a little far to get to or something like that. So they don't have a
Chris Palmer just toasted us.
Is he around?
No. He's having sushi with martinis.
Well, that figures,
but,
you know.
But that's that. That's so much for Chris.
So much for Chris. Yes.
Cheers.
Yeah, whatever. So anyhow, Monticello now is a tournament with no bids. And the thing is, okay, so fine, if you're a bid seeker, you probably don't want to go to Monticello. But frankly, most people are not bid seekers, especially this time of year. I got sophomores. There isn't a sophomore in the universe that's a bid seeker unless they're really, 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 really good. Right. That's one person in a hundred.
Well, they're seeking bid opportunities, but there is a substantial number of kids who, you're right, just are looking to work their way up to get ready for regional varsity competitions.
Yeah, and the other thing is, even if you want to be a varsity, TOC type debater in 2 years or a year from now, that doesn't mean you only go to the Bronx, or you only go to Glen. First of all, a lot of schools, there's only so many slots, you're not going to go to these tournaments.
That's right. That's true.
Yeah. So anyhow, we want to build a division, and so I'm calling it Academy Debate. We want to build this division that has no seniors in it. I mean, the seniors are banned. I mean, you can't be a senior and debate in this division. It's only for sophomores and juniors. So we're defining it as a sort of a glorified junior varsity. Yeah, I mean, it really is a junior varsity, but very clearly for the 2-year span of sophomores and juniors, very clearly not allowing the seniors to be in it, and also doing it when there is also a collateral novice division as well. So the novices just stay in the damn novice division where they belong. So there'd be, you know, like a Byram, I would hope to have a very aggressive, very aggressive novice divisions among novices, and then to have these academy things. Now, one of the benefits we get out of the academy thing, and this is another reason why tournaments have been having problems getting people to show up if there is no bid, is that they still cost the same amount of money. Because I would have, if I have a varsity division, the minute I call it a varsity division, I have to hire judges. I have to bring in college kids, you know. And so all of a sudden, if I go to your tournament and I bring a sophomore in the varsity division, it costs me a couple $100 because I have to hire a judge. Now, if I bring in that same sophomore and I call it the academy debate division, I can bring in one of my seniors. Right. It doesn't cost me anything.
Right. Saves, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so now I can, like, immediately eliminate the cost of, you know, I may want to bring in some of those judges, I may have them, that's not the point. The point is, if I don't have them, I'm not forced to go out and get them. This was a real problem.
It's a huge problem.
You know, and especially some of the, you take a place like, you know, the New Jersey schools, for example. New Jersey schools, very big programs, a lot of kids in every age group, in Newark and East Side and so forth, policy especially. They have a lot of kids that could do the judgment. Once you start getting out into that, they have to put people up at night, yeah, because they're not allowed to house, so they have to buy more rooms, and becomes, mm-hmm. yeah, it really starts adding up. So here's a way of eliminating some of the expense. And so this makes the tournament, okay, I don't want to go, yeah, I'm not going to go because it costs me a lot of money. All of a sudden, well, it doesn't cost a lot of money anymore. You know, so we take away, you know, at least part of the expense.
Yeah, if you don't have to provide tournament. Judges, that's typically your largest expense.
Yeah, so all of a sudden,
getting there.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, you know, if I'm bringing, a bunch of people, I may all of a sudden save like $300-$400. You know,
right.
By not having to buy judges. Now, here's the next thing.
Seniors can judge.
Yeah, seniors can judge. And
now,
are
there ELIMs?
Yeah, oh yeah, there's a regular tournament, it has five rounds, and then you break to whatever breaks you and you have the ELIMs.
Okay, so that's cool, because a lot of sophomores don't get a chance to compete in ELIM rounds, as you said.
Yeah, and they're going to get into them, because it's only sophomores and juniors, so they're debating at their own level. Otherwise, they're just going to lose to the varsity people, and they'll go watch ELIMs. They can actually be in the ELIMs. You know, so there is a sort of, you get some satisfaction out of this. But here's the other thing that makes, and this is why I call it academy debate, not just glorified junior varsity debate.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do with these tournaments.
Yeah.
What we can do with these tournaments is provide an additional educational experience. And like I said, it was hard to, I don't know if it's the perfect name, but it was the only name I could come up with and nobody else came up with one. So I want to provide an educational experience in addition to the debate. So my plan would be only to do this two or three times a year. And one of them is Monticello, as I said, which is in October, early in the year. And one of them is Byram Hills, which is the very first tournament of January.
Uh-huh.
So my idea is, what we come up with is just a couple of modules, sort of like institute-type modules, that we also offer in addition to the actual competition. So we talked about various ways of handling this, but if we had an academy division, we would also have maybe two of these modules if we could do it. And so now at Byram Hills, the way it's set up, this is your tournament, but I set it up, so what can I say?
And you're doing that, so.
Yeah.
It's yours. You can have it.
Thank you. We have three divisions of, we have three events. You have LD, and you have policy, and you have PF. Each of these will have an academy debate division, and each will have a novice division. And what we're going to do is, for the three different areas, for LD, for PF, and for policy, we will have modules. So the schedule, the way it's set up, you get there at like 3 o'clock, you register, blah, 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 blah. At 4 o'clock, from 4 o'clock to about 4:45, there's going to be the first module. And one of the things I wanted to do was I don't want to abandon the seniors altogether. At the very right. beginning of the year, we have this Metro Hudson League workshop, and we take all the new kids, novices and JVers in the region that we can get, and we just introduce them to the various activities, and we have used seniors to help us do that instruction. Good debaters, good seniors who are really committed to the activity, really like passing along their knowledge to other people, mm-hmm. and they're good at it. I mean, these are seniors who have spent the
last
3 years.
Oh, yeah,
well,
we saw this at the MHL workshop.
Yeah, yeah, you see that? I mean, these are like communicators who have something to communicate. You know,
right.
It's not a problem.
Yeah, it was great because it was an opportunity for experienced coaches to also work with seniors and give a presentation to people who are just seeing LD for the first time or PF.
This has been proven really work well. So what I want to do is try to attract, and I'm going to do this over the Christmas vacation when people actually start knowing who they have. I'm going to say, okay, who do you have that are your seniors that can come and help us run the academic part, the educational part, the modules? And so one of the things I was thinking I would like to get a couple of these kids in each of these groups, one for PF and one for LD and mm-hmm. policy. And what we would do is on the first day, that 4 o'clock to 4:45, I want to get somebody who's already in the TOC. Let's say,
right.
take as a PF kid now. These kids are going to go to, they're going to go to TOC. And they're now talking to sophomores for the most part and some juniors. And I want to interview them. I want to do an ask me anything kind of thing where I want them to tell me why they got bids. Mm-hmm. What did you do? I want to know what you did. How did you do
sure.
your research? How did you dress? What did you do during prep time?
So is this just a Q&A or is it a structured?
I want them to give a presentation.
Lecture. Okay.
But I don't know how much they can talk about. But then you have like somebody in the back of the room, myself, you, whoever, and we'll spread this out. We'll use the coaches to do this so that we have people in these rooms to make sure we're getting, you know, all that other kind of information as well. You know, so we have, you know, the way I framed it, written out, was top 10 ways to win.
Yeah.
Okay, so they go in and give their top 10 ways to win. And I would imagine that knowing debaters, there will be enough talk amongst them that all you do, you need a moderator maybe, but you don't have to do any seating at all. But,
right.
you know, you'll be there just in case. And because I would really like, that's a real question in public forum. What are the people doing in those two or four, because we get four, miserable right. minutes of prep time, right? I mean,
sure.
I know what I'm doing
yeah,
in prep time
in
LD.
Yeah, it's a question parents had for me when I gave mm-hmm. our most recent judging workshop.
Yeah.
Just what do you do with all that time? What do you do when the other person's taking prep time?
Yeah. And what do you do when they're talking? I mean,
sure.
Who's taking notes? I mean, can you talk to each other?
Hopefully
all this
some
kind
idea.
Of stuff.
Hey,
yeah. So
there's a listening element.
Yeah. I mean, I have a top 10 list of how to win LD or something like that. Yeah. So what are your top? Yeah. What is the top 10 for PF and LD? Same thing. What are the? Why do you have these bids? What did you do? Yeah, what information did you, are there drills? What were the drills that you did? Why have you researched and found all this stuff that I didn't find? You know, did you hire a private coach? Okay, fine. Yeah, if you have a private coach, maybe I need to get a private coach if I want to make that, you know, leap into that area. But when do we talk about this stuff? You never talk about this stuff. You know, this stuff is just totally... doesn't happen. I mean, I talk to my team. You talk to your. Everybody talks to
right.
their own team about what they know about. But let's get to find out, you know, communicate some other information, get some other information. And I think that will be attractive to people. I think that'll be very, very attractive to people. And the other thing I wanted to do was on the second day. So then, okay, so this is 4 o'clock to 4:45. At 5 o'clock, round start. You know, so we have two rounds on Friday. You get out of there. 9:30, whatever, you know, usual kind of thing. You'll have had two rounds. It's a smallish tournament. The next day we're going to have three rounds, three more prelims. During the fifth round, the third one on Saturday, since it's flighted, we won't do a policy we do a little differently, but with the flighted rounds, we just say one of those flights. When it's not one of the flights, then we do the next module.
Right.
So we don't even interfere with the schedule. And there, I would like to do topic analysis.
Okay.
You know, because PF will
sure.
have, every time you turn around, this is true, PF has a new topic. So the PF topic for February is going to be a China topic. Now, they're voting on it now. I think it's going to, you know, I think voting closes tomorrow. If
the they advertise it so well.
Yeah, well, believe me, I mean, I'm not going to talk about the NFL. I've talked enough about the NFL. The NFL loves me. Anyhow.
This part might be edited out.
No, it won't. I don't edit it out. The NFL, I have issues with the NFL, but I've already written them up very clearly. They are, and I need not go through them again. And the NFL has issues with me, and it works out like a charm.
They should write theirs too.
I don't think so. I'd have to pay to read them, but that's beside the point. So China, and one of the things was that I think it was China, the U.S. need, you know, should, it's beneficial for the U.S. to deal with China. Or something like that. And the other was a little more specific, that China's influence on Southeast Asia was a negative factor of some sort. Yeah, so it's going to be one of these two things. And, you know, it's a good 45 minutes of brainstorming on China. I mean, my cat could lead that discussion. That's going to be a great discussion. But I know a lot of schools don't necessarily have access to like good brainstorming. You know, you see there's going to be a lot of schools. I know some teams are coming here that are new. They've never.
That's exciting.
Done any of this kind of stuff, so they don't know how to talk about this stuff. LD, I mean, either we could do a background thing on retributive justice, or we could talk about just the prison system in general, or you can talk about the topic. I mean, there's a variety of ways of handling it, but there's a lot. I mean, in a way, the topic is narrow, but it's such a broad area. Retributive justice, there's a lot of stuff on there. I mean, I have some material I know of, which is just a utilitarian view of retributive justice, that you have to hit these three different steps and things like that. I mean, there's all this wonderful stuff, and it's easy to come up with this various stuff, but I don't know if people are going to come up. I mean, I've come up with it because I've been doing this for 50,000 years, and you know, every time I look, I find something new. So I don't know how much stuff people have on this. Mm-hmm. So we have that in policy. What we were going to do is the first policy round, break round, either you're in it or we have the academy offering, which in this case, one of the things Cheryl Kaczmarek had offered ideas, and one of them which was really good, was what do you do for the second half of the year? I mean, you've been doing this same topic. I mean, how do you keep things fresh? How do you keep things going? How do you do new stuff? Yeah, so she had some good ideas, so we would incorporate those good ideas as well. Yeah, okay. So we have something for everybody here. Now,
I'm excited.
I see Byram as the, obviously the first time we do it, it's not going to be perfect, but yeah, like I said, when I talk about the idea that we don't have opportunities for second year students, everybody agrees with that. Doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter where they come from. Everybody agrees with that. That doesn't mean they take advantage of the ones that are there. I mean, the same people that say, I wish I had more rounds for my sophomores are the people who aren't coming to the tournaments Byram was already there. Monticello is already there. And they're not going to these tournaments. But if we can make these tournaments more, I mean, Monticello is going to die. I mean, I've said this pretty clearly in my blog. And I think it's going to happen because people.
How many kids did it have this year?
30 or so in each division. And a lot of it is...
How many did it have when it had a TOC bid?
100 and something.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, at least in LD. I mean, LD went... We were over 100. Then it started coming down. And then it built up again because they eliminated the JV division. But it was always 100. And then it shrank down. Right. And because, people and- just... don't want to go because, but if I can make that tournament attractive beyond just the fact that it's naturally attractive, I say, look, you got sophomores, you got juniors, they got nowhere else to go. Because here's the thing, they can go to Yale and have their heads handed to them because it's a quarters bid and they're not going to, or in PF, it's an octos bid. So these people are going to lose. And then they got the New York City Invitational, which they'll be lucky if you even get them in because, they only have five entries per team. And after that, what, you're going to send them to Glen Brooks? So the next thing they conceivably have is my tournament. They have Bump, right?
And takes
Bump,
a lot of
which
moolah.
Is, like Bump at least they have, it is, it's a good enough opportunity, but, is way later in the universe, and plus you got a semis bid, which means you're going to have, you know, twice as many people as the bid working at the bid. So you're going to, you know, you'll be lucky if you break. If you're really good, mm-hmm. you can break. It's the best you can hope for, but at least you have a chance. But these other tournaments, you don't even have the chance. So it, you know, the beginning of the year, if you're a sophomore, is bleak. Or you can go to MHLs. Now, MHLs are fine. They're nice one-day tournaments.
Right.
They do them really well.
Right, quick and easy.
But they're not elimination rounds. They don't have the
For novices, cachet. They're perfect. But
yeah. No, you got to start somewhere. But without the cachet of going overnight, having break rounds and all that excitement, you know, it's just, you know, like I said, I want to keep people in forensics as long as I can. I mean, that's my goal. I want as many people to do as much forensics as imaginable. That's all I want, because I'm absolutely am unshakably convinced that you will be better for it the more you do it. Simple as that. So I think this is a way to make that happen. And with two really good opportunities to do it, one of them being, like I said, Byron, beginning of the year, and the other being Monticello, which is the beginning of the actual, you know, debate season altogether. You know, these two are separated by 3 months and have some real opportunities to do things like this. So you became the guinea pig on this, and I sort of...
Well, I thank you for providing such an elaborate explanation of what exactly Academy Debate is.
Well, shoving it down your throat.
I hope a lot of schools take the chance to compete.
I mean, I think this is the kind of thing that we will be looked at a little bit. I mean, most people aren't going to pay that much attention, but I publicized it enough now that people, I think, will be curious enough. And like I say, it's not going to be perfect the first time, but if we pull this kind of thing off, and then the people that go say, yeah, that was a good experience. I want my team to go back next year so that my next year's sophomores get that same experience.
Right.
Then, you know, we do start building up. You know, we have set the ground, and we work on from there. And that would be a good thing. So that is the goal here. And you'll have a good tournament, too. You know, it's like...
Well, it's important to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's important for debaters to know that it's not just about working towards becoming one of the top 10, 15, whatever have you, debaters in the country. They can still get the benefits of debating. 90%, I think, comes from just being in rounds and competing.
Yeah, I mean, there's all
your first
this stuff.
2 years.
Yeah, getting into
to me, sometimes it's more rational almost to quit after 2 years, because by then you've obtained a lot of the benefits that the long-lasting benefits that debate
has. It's true,
has.
But I also like the idea of keeping people around to judge. I've had a lot of kids.
No way am I saying the debaters should quit after 2 years, but I'm saying hopefully they feel like it's not varsity or nothing. They can still work their way towards varsity by doing Academy Debate.
I built early on. I realized I was going to have kids that would disappear as juniors, and I've tried to make the team as attractive as possible to them just to judge. You know, I will. That's one of the reasons I do trivia nights and things like that, because it keeps people as part of the team.
Right.
And then
how did that go?
You know, my basement was filled with kids last night.
That's great. Bean trivia. Know, who won?
One of my graduates, actually. You know, I had a sophomore in high school and versus a sophomore at Yale. It was mano a mano for a while. And on the very last question, the girl from Yale was able, we did an alternating thing, name the presidents in order.
Oh,
she did better.
Cruz did this to me at Princeton. Own me.
Here's the thing. If you want to go to Newark and you don't want to get lost, you have to learn this, because the streets in Newark are the presidents in order.
Ooh.
I would tell my bus driver, okay, the school's on the 8th president. He would just look at me like I'm crazy. You know, it is. He's the 8th president. It's not my fault. Okay, it's Jackson. The next one. Okay, yeah, but whatever. So, actually, this one girl, the sophomore, has been in finals since she started. So she's like really good at trivia. I have people, but anyhow, like I said, the point being, I like to keep people around. First of all, I like these people. I like having them, and I like having them work with the team. I like having them work with the younger kids. You know, they will tell the kids stuff you will never tell them. I mean, you're already too far away from it. They're going to get other lore and other information, and they're going to get a take on you. They're going to say, Ari, blah, 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 blah. And that's good. So you need that. I need a team with,
of course, you need
as many people as possible.
You need kids that come back because it gives the program a sense of tradition. Yeah, so that's something that John's been able to do at Bronx Science that I aspire to do, whether it be at Whitman, Byram, or when I was at Glenbrook North, and it's something that you're doing at Hanrod.
I mean, yeah, getting – here's my thing. It was I remember this from the very beginning, and it's never changed. I would go to the Newark tournament, and – you go to this tournament, and on, during the whole tournament, alums would judge. Alums would come back from like 50,000 years ago to judge. And I'm thinking to myself, this is what a team ought to be. This is, they come back. They know what they got out of this activity, and they're going to come, and they're going to give back. And they do it, and Newark to me was a shining star. I wanted to be like that. I wanted to have a team like that where people came back. And, you know, when I had our tournament, they would be there judging. And I've been able to do it. But I credit Jonathan Alston and the group over there at Newark for having set up that ideal. Because I've seen many, many schools where kids graduate and they never have anything to do with their team again. And that to me is a failure.
How does Jonathan keep them coming back? Jonathan, by having a tournament?
No, he keeps them coming back because when they were there, he treated them really well. Because Jonathan is, I mean, when you talk about, he's like the mensch of mensches. Yeah, so he's a really wonderful guy. And he educates them, you know, so he's a good educator.
He's always reading. I noticed that.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's like.
He always has a book.
Yeah, no, he's like, you know, they wanted to, they learned from him. They realized that they learned from him. And then they come back because they saw what it did for them and they want to do the same thing for other people. And it has nothing to do with, it's Newark or something like that. And, you know, no, it's a question of, I don't care who you are, you're going to get stuff out of this. And if you realize you got stuff out of it, you're going to want to give that stuff to other people. That's why I think we see a lot of people that stay with debate way past their expiration date.
Right.
Just because they saw that value and they said, you know, this made me smart. I wasn't, you know, I knew some stuff. I was always like sharp, but I didn't know anything. You know, now so I know stuff. I was able to use the brains I got. That's what debate does. So,
and that's why I think you should stick with it. Throughout high school and beyond.
Yeah, but so anyway,
back to judge.
You build up that
recruit kids, build exactly, and that's
and the other. And like I said, if we bring back our seniors, and even let's say I bring a star senior, and the star senior is going to do the PF stuff, I'm still going to have my other senior judges in that room, and I'm going to turn to a kid who maybe has only debated once or twice as a senior, and I'm going to say, "What do you think about that?" You know, and so everybody's going to be in, and that makes them feel like, "Yeah, I'm part of this." You know. Because one thing we are such a specific, unique community that that's one of the attractions, I think, in the first place. People go to a tournament, a novice goes to a tournament, and says, I want to be a part of these people, or I don't, one of the two. But they can certainly see that this is a group of people that they either want to be a part of or they don't want to be a part of. And if they do want to be a part of it, this is a way to be a part of it, you know, all the way through. And, you know, keeping everybody at, as long as we conceivably can. So it goes. Anyhow, that is Academy Debate in a nutshell.
Well, this is your brainchild, and I look forward to seeing it at its inception.
It'll be there at its, inception, conception. Conception we did behind closed doors. Actually, we talked about this. I talked about this with a number of people. You know, Aracelis Beale and John Cruz.
At NY, at one of our NYSFL meetings.
And, although if it works, I'll be happy to take all the credit. And if it fails, it's really a group effort.
I will be the first to give it to you.
If it fails, I had nothing. I tried to talk them out of it, and they wouldn't listen to me. But, you know, so it goes. So you're going to, while you're on the horn, so you're going to have another podcast after you finish this.
Right after this, we're going to be doing a video cast on the Jan-Feb resolution with Jeff Liu, Emily Massey, and maybe a special guest or two. And
Yeah, but don't try to
we're
get
trying to think
Palmer
of
because he's
segments to
doing.
do. And right now, the only one that comes to my mind is top five favorite Flame Wars. And I wish we could call John in as a guest because I'm sure he would have so much to add because he ran VVD for so many years. And it was his love child. It was
And the Flame
he
Wars
really
was
made that website.
the Flame Wars drove him
And
crazy.
he moderated so many Flame Wars, participated in
Yeah.
them, and I would just like to hear his thoughts on the matter because I mean, really, my favorite Flame Wars are all from when he ran the website. Some of them his own doing.
I would just read these things and then I would just. Now he tells me what not to read. I say, oh, I hear there was like discussion about something. He said, don't read it. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. I'm fine with
Really, the
that.
Flame Wars of today are tame by.
Yeah, well, this stuff used to real. Well, part of it, there was something about the VBD, which was just everybody seemed to be on it. And it was like, it goes back with the. I don't know, were you around when we had the LDL list server? That may be
No,
before your time.
VVD was around when I
Yeah.
was
The LDL
computing.
was its predecessor, and PJ had set this up. It's just a list server. And, so you would get messages from everybody, and some people just never seemed to go to bed, and they would get message upon message upon message,
And kids would go line. I love it when coaches and debaters go line by line on these threads as if people are following the evolution of arguments one by one, flowing it as if they were in a debate.
I think you're just answering the person to whom you're responding.
It's just
Yeah,
who
that.
has time to.
Yeah, but it's just okie doke. That's why, I mean, part of it is I think if we had more conversation, like having just regular conversations, we wouldn't have to worry about the flame war kind of conversations. But a lot of those, too, are just people probably really need something better to do with their day. I mean,
Well,
no,
having workshops at tournaments is one way to. That's really something that doesn't happen at national tournaments.
There's no positive stuff. I mean, we need to have some positive places for people to talk.
But the only way you'll get a conversation is when you have everyone together, and the only time you have people around each other who don't like each other, most wouldn't hang out with one another, is at a tournament. So that these things need to happen. Probably not online.
I've had a few conversations that were adversarial. That were pretty good in a very good way. Because when you are
They
actually
can be.
facing somebody, you're civilized, and you actually might get somewhere talking about different positions as
But
compared to the other.
what I'm going to have you on it if the show ends up if it's something we do on a regular basis, I'd like you to do a little segment where you teach people how to tab, where we put the camera on you and you just show people how to run a basic tournament.
I'm happy to do it.
Because I think it's important for people to see your methodology and how do you. I think a lot of people are scared of using TRPC, and
Well, we're, I
just
mean,
from
TRPC
watching you
it's a
to tournaments
dying
here.
beast. We're going to go over to a new system probably during the next season.
Oh, you think by next year you'll be using Palmer's?
I mean, I need to have a fallback position, but I have it because if I'm working in Palmer's system, it creates an XML file that I can pull at any point,
For
and
people who are listening for the first time, that's tabroom.com. And Palmer is Chris Palmer, the person who codes, runs the website. He's the CEO, I guess you would say.
Whatever. But that all the data that's for registration, and then we take all that we port it out into TRPC. But he's creating a tabbing program to, I mean, it does already tab speech, and now he wants to
Oh, it
tab.
does. Okay. And that's what Vaughn walks around punching things in his iPad on, right?
So you can do that on your iPad. I want to
Okay,
do
that's cool.
tabbing on my iPad, although I don't know some of this. There's a different speech tabbing, which I don't understand particularly well, as Chris is want to tell me, is way different from debate tabbing. For one thing, everything's preset, as compared to brackets and all this kind of stuff. So, it's a different business. And once you throw in mutual judge preferences or something like that, I don't know
But it's not
how,
baked into TRP, or the double flighting aspect isn't baked into TRPC. It's not used to having to pair a mutual one in the flight B, right? And that's where problems come in.
Yeah, it does. It does okay. it. Although the funny thing is, if I go to a big tournament and most people have prepped, everything comes out, and almost everybody gets ones. If I go to a small, like NDCA, which maybe had 45, 50 people, and everybody prepped, right? Maybe two people, because they were local and they were the host school, and so we let them in, didn't prep. And everybody else prepped. And we had five categories and 50 people, so we probably had about 60, 70 judges at most. And I still was able to do, everybody got ones, except occasionally we got a couple of twos. You know, so, you know, it does work. But, you know, it can be a little labor intensive. And you have to know when to stop. That's a key thing. We were talking about that at the NDCA. I mean, you can keep juggling this stuff till the cows come home. And after a while, it's like, no, I think we're done now.
But you have to know when to
print. Yeah, sometimes you're going to get a two. You know, you're both going to get a two. And sometimes you're both going to get a three, you know, because it's mutual. It's not the most preferred. We try to give you the most preferred judge, but it's mutual. A three, your three is their three. Your four is their four. I'm sorry about that, but you rank them a four. That doesn't mean you don't get them. That means you get them when we don't have any one, twos, and threes.
A question for you on while we're on the subject of prefs. It seems like a lot of people have issues with what they thought they entered before the tournament began, and then what ends up being the case once the tournament starts.
Okay, I learned a lot about this at the Bronx, and I went over it with Chris afterwards. There is a feature in Tab Room where you can absolutely see what everybody entered, which I wasn't aware of.
I think so, we should seriously consider having an open... Would you be up for an open tab, or...
So yeah, they are. All our tabs are open, except I'm trying to get some work done. But
by open, I mean, this is what you rank them, this is what they rank them. The end.
No, you can see that. It's already in tabroom.com.
That's in DRPC too, right? But we don't print it.
But we don't print it there. But no, you can't see that. But I mean, you can go into tabroom.com and see, okay, I ranked this person whatever. And then you can go into the other person and see what they rank them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, that is there. As far as
And you're comfortable with...
I know you can see what you rank them.
You're comfortable with competitors seeing what other competitors... And you're comfortable with judges knowing that they...
That's what I'm not necessarily...
Whatever.
I don't know if you... See, I may be overstating this. I know you can see what you ranked somebody.
Okay.
And I'm happy to show you that. But there is a point where I don't know if I necessarily want the judges to know how I ranked
them. I agree.
You know, that becomes problematic. I mean, sometimes people will rank me or somebody else in the tab room. And, mostly somebody will rank me a one, for instance. I said, what are you, an idiot? I'm not judging you. You just wasted
your
one.
You reverse prepping.
Or they'll strike me. And I said, what are you striking me for? I'm never, you know, you've got plenty of people who hate even more than I do. And they're going to judge you, you know? So it's like, but even, I love when they give you like a three. What do you mean you give me a three? I'm not going to judge, and you give me a three, you idiot.
Right.
I mean, and that's me, you know, and so I don't even care.
Go big or go home.
Yeah, so it's like, I think a lot of judges, especially people who judge a lot, if I found out that somebody had ranked me low, and then I go in and I'm judging them, and somewhere that's in the back of my head, especially knowing that they both ranked me low or something like that. Now, I've had coaches come to me and say, how come I got this judge? I gave him a four.
Right.
And I said, well, you gave him a four, the opponent gave him a four, and you guys had no mutual ones, no mutual twos, no mutual threes. I mean, this happened at Princeton. And she came up to me and I said, I can't understand why I got a four. So that's because you prep so radically weird that you're lucky you can get a four. Yeah, it's as simple as that. And it's just the way it is. And actually,
like,
she was well aware
of this. People
think
they're being targeted. But really, all you see in tab is just... you just see random letters smushed together with other letters.
We never
see the school even. It's just...
We don't care who the people are. What I care is...
There's
I want
to
see A-A-A-A-plus, A-plus, 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 or A-A. Yeah, I can live with a 2-2. But what I mostly want to see is A+.
And you're not even fixating on what the 5-0 or 6-0 debate is. You're focusing on the down twos.
Yeah, we always started the down twos. So they always get the best for them. Whatever, they all get A+. Then we go up to the down ones. Then we go to the zeros. And then Now, everybody else gets what's left over, but I do have a fondness for people who paid the money to come to the tournament that they ought to get treated nicely too. So if you're down three, I don't think you get, okay, I'm just going to pull in any damn fool.
Right.
I think you still should get the best judge I can give you. Competitively, I have an obligation to give them to somebody else first. I can't give you, you know, like, you know, the highest pref judge in the pool, but I can give you people that are still good for you, and I don't just stop. I've worked with people who might be inclined to stop once they get to the past the down twos, and I don't think that's a good idea. I think you have to be, you know, agreeable down to the down whatevers, the down fours. Well, actually, I do have a few people who judge who I don't like, and I give them the 0-4 there, I mean, I would sit there and say, oh, yeah, I remember what you did to me last night.
Right.
0-4.
And then one judge knew that they were targeted by you.
There are some people.
It was their, they posted the status that their punishment was judging the 0-5 debate. Bob Overing, congratulations.
This is the thing is, I mean, most of the time I don't do that, and it just is, if you're judging that those rounds, part of it is TRPC loves to pair you a 5-0-0-5. I mean, that's just a natural thing, and I will have missed it. The other thing is some people just are so lowly prepped that they're lucky to get any rounds. I have nothing to do with that. I didn't fill the prefs out, you know. You want to get prepped higher and judge one, well, let's put it this way. If you want to get prepped higher, you're going to have a lot of work ahead of you because you're going to be doing down two rounds, and those tend to be tough rounds to judge. You know, some rounds are easy, you know, but like the third round and the fourth round are really hard to judge if you're in the bubble rounds. You know, you get into the fifth round, it's pretty easy. You probably don't even have to go in if you knew what the bracket was. But third round, fourth round, whew, anything, you know, those are tough. Those are hard-fought rounds, and they tend to be done by relatively equal pairings, you know, so those are tough. So you don't want to be highly prepped. You want to be like, I don't want that judge. And then you just get to go into the 0-5 round or the 5-0 round. Piece of cake. Actually, we do try to, one thing I do try to do, and you know this because you've watched, we do, if we're in the 5-0s, we do want to give high prefs if there seems to be a speaker award at stake.
Oh, okay.
We do want those people to get some good judging because they're in the hunt for something other than just winning. You know, that
right.
may not matter whether or not they win, but it does matter that they get the right kind of points and stuff. So we want them to get their highly prepped judges too. That's important.
That makes sense.
All right. Well, you're going to go to your other podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to go from one podcast to a vidcast. Is that what it's called?
Well, I want you to go comb your hair and
okay.
which
I'm
would
wearing
do too
my funny
if I had
glasses.
Any. You know, so and put your shoes on.
Nope. And, not wearing pants.
All right, are you going to? You're not going to go to the CFL this weekend, are you? You guys are out of business.
I'm in Chicago until New Year's.
Okay. Well, then I'll see you at Byram then, right?
I will see you at Byram. Yes, and okay. I have a great gift for you. I'm not going to mail it to you; it would break. But
right.
I'm going to give it to you at Byram, and
I look forward to it.
I think you'll like it. It's better than cruises.
Okay. Well, I shall see
Cruise,
you.
But Cruise has his puzzle.
Okay. I will
All
see
right.
you in
so,
a couple of weeks. Have a good holiday. And
that's right. Happy belated
care.
Hanukkah to all my Jewish listeners. All our Jewish listeners.
Well,
actually, am I a regular member or am I just a guest contributor?
All your listeners.
I don't know. We'll see.
My brother chimes in.
We'll see. We'll decide if you're we'll see what the fans say.
Okay.
You know? Okay. Well, keep those cards. We have like one person, our Jewish listenership. The only person I ever knew who listened to this was Abdul.
Bruce.
Yeah,
is going to listen to this one because he's not in it.
All right,
that might be the only one. I don't know.
Okay.
My brother might listen to it. I have three, so there we go. That would be four listeners.
There we go. It's like we multiplied like crazy. Okay, I'm going to turn this thing off. So,
all right, farewell.
I'll see you.
Thanks for having me on.
And yeah.